Hello, and welcome to Sex, Psychics, and Psychedelics, Discovering Inner Liberation. My name is Banana Jane Garnett. I'm a licensed psychotherapist, a lover of freedom, and a relentless explorer of the mind. Please come join me on my journey in hot pursuit of inner illumination and liberation. For more about me, you can find me at The Banana Jane on Instagram. Now let's dive in. My next guest is rock star shaman, Alison Charles. Alison is a motivational speaker and an author. Most recently, she's written a book called Animal Power. This is all about the medicine that different animals have to offer us when we reach out to them, when we connect to them. She's working with that beautiful shamanic system of interconnectivity, something that she refers to later in this talk as Earth School. I'm enamored of her and her practice, and I can't wait to share her with you. Welcome, Alison. Well, welcome. I have looked at your book, Animal Power, and I think it's so wonderful. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely beautiful. Beautiful drawings and beautiful guided notes on how to work with different animals. I mean, this is a book after my own heart. I think it's absolutely magical. So I want to talk about the book, but let's get some orientation first. I know you've been on a big ride, and that you used to be an athlete and a TV personality and a host, and now you're a rock star shaman and you're motivating people all over the globe and talking to animals. And like, how did this all happen? Tell me about the sort of the, you know, the background to this and your awakenings.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, this is always the interesting part. Trying to whittle down how I landed here. But essentially, the most concise explanation that I can give is that while I was incarnated with this shamanic calling and mission, very much encoded inside of me, I was really staunchly resisting that truth and resisting pivoting over into getting into alignment with that path. And so in that resistance, I was in a very long term romantic relationship over 16 years where it was, you know, of course, everything is divinely perfect and I wouldn't change anything. And I've learned so much, but that path was shrouded in just so much anguish and dysfunction and toxicity, and at times varying levels of abuse, and a lot of denial and a lot of codependency on my end. And I can.
So I'm just going to slow you down a second, just to get again even more bearings on this. So you were working in the media, and you were having a relationship that was, what do we say, the opposite of nourishing?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to describe it. I mean, before I was working in media, we were both college athletes. And so that was a previous identity that was very much entrenched in me, was, you know, national champion athlete. And there's a lot of layers to unpack there. But once my body started to break down, yes, then I started to pivot over to the world of media. And I was a radio host and a TV talk show host. And it was during my time in television that all of the awakening processes started to come into more full effect. Yes.
And what were the awakening processes?
Well, it was getting to what I was explaining about how I had been denying these truths and this calling inside of me for so long. And I was at times looking to that relationship, of course, at that time in an unconscious way as a vehicle of distracting myself from facing the truth of the relationship, distracting myself from facing the truth of myself and my earth mission, distracting myself from anything that is of divine. I was totally in illusion and denial. And so because I was very dedicated to that way and letting myself be in that cycle of insanity, my awakening came from a divine intervention because I was not a very willing participant in listening to all the signs that all of my guides were trying to send my way. I was just, you know, I would notice I was on anti-anxiety medication and having severe panic attacks and just not do deeper exploration. I would notice that I was having severe autoimmune disorders in my body and be like, huh, that's weird. I'm in the wellness industry and I'm, you know, used to be a personal trainer and used to be a Division I college coach. And I think that I'm very healthy and well, but I'm not, but I didn't do deeper exploration. So it culminated to a one moment in time where my guides had to come in and turn on my clairaudient gift. And that started the next domino process of me changing the course of my life through their help.
Okay. So clairaudient, meaning you channel messages through, you hear messages?
Hear. Yes, exactly. I could hear spirit speak to me on this day where I had my awakening moment take place. I was hearing instructions in my right ear, and it was through me following those instructions that I finally saw the proof of, facing my greatest fears essentially as to what was going on in the relationship. And in facing that, I then opened myself up over the next week to facing myself and taking responsibility for my role and allowing myself to be in that kind of dynamic for so long. And, you know, really asking myself, you know, why for almost 20 years, for nearly two decades, were you allowing yourself to be treated this way? Why were you allowing your body to be dishonored every time you were physical with this person? So in me finally facing those aspects, I realized I had a lot of work to do. So I just set out on a quest to heal myself. And that's the process that took me to the understanding of who I really am, was just committing to healing myself. Mm.
I do think this is the spiritual function of dysfunctional relationships. Nothing will kick our ass like a bad relationship. Nothing will force us into our shadows and the darkest corners of our being. I mean, I've been there. So, I think it can be a really important part of waking up. And I feel like some of what you're talking about is also codependency, which is, I feel, a sort of a massive issue amongst humans. Of course, we're wired to be, you know, in connection and look for connection, and we're mirrors to each other. So it's very easy to get lost in that, and all of the kind of externalizations, you know, of relationship, and not sit with our own difficult feelings. So hooray for this journey. And how did the animals come into this journey?
They came in right away, actually. So once I had this veil lifting, dropped to my knees simultaneously, miraculous moment of, you know, finally getting out of denial and waking up, then I became, like I said, in devotion to my healing. And I finally got myself into a place of being willing to have a conscious awareness of the messages and the signs coming in, instead of like letting them come in, but then just ignoring. I decided, okay, I'm going to let them come in and I'm going to heed every single one of them. And two of the first messages that came in, I somehow was pointed to a shaman in Minnesota. She's a medical doctor turned shaman, Sarah Seidelman. She's amazing. And I even interviewed her on my podcast, Ceremony Circle, not too long ago. And neither one of us can recall, because that was over a decade ago, how universe connected us. But that was a really paramount session. And then I was also guided to having a shamanic healing session with my aunt. And it was in that soul retrieval healing session that my animal allies started to come forward. So my core power animal is the Black Panther. And then I had three supporter animal allies, the bear, frog, and deer, who all came in to help me. And that very catalytic, you know, scary but beautiful time in my life. And so, as I'm sure you know, but maybe some of your listeners don't know, each power animal has different healing attributes and wisdom teachings and medicines that they come forward to empower us with, but it's up to us to, you know, open up that dynamic and to really receive their help in. And so they came in actually right after I woke up, and I've been working with them, you know, every day since.
Okay. So, for the people who are unfamiliar with the idea of a power animal, yes. could you help us out with that?
Yeah. So, the animal realm, both in the seen world, our physical world, and in the unseen realms, animals come to us to be our allies, our spiritual support system, our guides, our brothers and sisters. But you know, it's really up to us to take notice of when a certain animal is trying to get our attention. And so some of the examples of how they try to get our attention is, you know, the example that I just shared with a trusted shaman guiding a shamanic journey to call your power animal helpers forward and getting to know them there. Oftentimes they will also come to you during your dreams or in everyday waking life. You might, you know, come across a ton of ladybugs. Like all of a sudden you walk out of your door and there's never been a ladybug on the brick wall outside of your door. But one day you go out and there's five of them. And then when you call a friend, she mentions ladybugs. And then you open up a magazine and you see ladybugs. That's one example.
This is the story of my life, by the way, because
oh, really?
I see ladybugs. I love ladybugs and I see them wherever humanly possible. What is the ladybug message, by the way?
Oh man, there's so many beautiful teachings with ladybug. Yeah. One of the main ones is releasing worry and being in a place of receiving in a lot of additional good fortune and blessings that are trying to make their way in, and also a symbol of connection into higher consciousness. Those are some of the main keyword attributes of the ladybug.
Yeah. Oh, beautiful. Yeah. I always think of them as little jewels, you know, they're like little cosmic jewels.
Totally.
Cosmic rubies. Intelligent rubies. Gosh, it's so fascinating to me because this, okay, so my background is kind of academic, analytic, and I've been on all sorts of sort of more shamanic deep dives, and I'm very interested in the imagination and how we can create. And I wonder, with animal medicine, how are we, if we close our eyes and, okay, so we go to a circle and there's a shaman and we're told that, you know, when the drumming starts, we're going to meet an animal. Our imagination is already going in that direction, isn't it? It's already going animal, animal, animal. And are we conjuring the animal? Is the animal visiting us because we're creating that space? Is it both? How does this whole thing work?
Yeah, I mean, it is hard to put into human words. Any genuine shaman that's, you know, truly connected to the divine and creating a true safe space to guide people into other realms of consciousness, until you experience it and kind of get out of your own way of letting the human mind, you know, doubt or question and things like that. Not that you shouldn't ever doubt or question, but unless you have voyaged in this way, it's really hard to put into human words what the experience feels like or looks like. But I can only speak to my work. I don't know about, you know, many other shamans and how they guide animal journeys. But yeah, I use my drum and my rattle, and there's a lot of processes that take place before I just start doing the drumming. I tune in before the journey to really ask, you know, is it, if it's one person or a group? I mean, I've guided some of these journeys for more than 10,000 people at one time. And so each situation is very different in terms of, what does this person or group need, before we get to the journey, to get to a place where they're in their hearts and they're not in their monkey mind and they're not in their ego and they're not in the resistance of, like, you know, or in a place where they want to disbelieve. It's like, I want to get people into a place where they can tell they're being held in a safe, sacred space and they can let go and surrender. And typically that equates to getting them into their heart. So there's different energetic spiritual processes that I do beforehand to let people let go. And then I will start to do the drumming or the rattling, and I speak, I guide people. You know, there's different realms that I take folks to, but one of my favorite places is we start in a desert, you know, go to a tree, and then that tree becomes the portal to the different world or realm. And once we get into the other realm, I guide them into a jungle. And then that's where, you know, it's not a like boom in your face process. Once we get into the jungle, we start to connect with the energy there of that portal of that place and start to walk alongside the river and like invite the water medicine in. And there's a lot of intricacies involved to get a person to where they're in the place in the jungle and taking a seat to the point where we're actually calling the animal forward. So yeah, the animal, the power animal in that different realm of consciousness is absolutely coming forward to you. Sometimes, you know, more than not, the animal will come and, you know, the person can make eye contact and hug and speak to the animal and receive medicine blessings, sometimes in the form of a bite. You know, all of those things can happen. Sometimes during a journey, a person can see like the animal's eyes and it will just stay though, like more in the corner of the jungle and won't fully reveal. And there's all sorts of different processes that can come up and happen in a journey. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of the best way that I can describe what I do.
No, that's beautiful. Thank you. Yeah, you're reminding me of actually of how I found you. I stumbled across your book and I thought, oh, how wonderful. And then I, you know, went down one of the Alice and Charles rabbit holes on the internet. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there are many. And I found myself doing your meditation. One of your meditations was a meter. An animal guide or a power animal meditation. Mm-hmm. And I was really struck by the specificity of this animal that appeared, and I'm still struggling with the name of this animal, but I thought it looked like it was a bison or a buffalo. It was dark black with horns, you know, like a black cow with its head sort of slanting down and these horns, and I kept meeting it, and it was like, and there was a part of my mind going like, no, this is not my animal, but it was my animal. It kept coming up, and then I looked it up, and it was hard for me to find this specific animal because I looked up, I think it was bison, and they have those like woolly heads. Mm-hmm. I was like, no, my animal didn't have a woolly head, you know, it had a shiny head, eventually I found this very specific creature, and then that led me to a whole other world of information. So it was a really lovely kind of adventure. So thank you, first of all, for your meditation, and your guidance. I just thought it's so fascinating how whenever I've been in that space, it just seems very, very specific. That animal does seem to have a life of its own, and it does feel like a visitation and a gift. And obviously, us becoming receptive is very much part of that. So I suppose that there is a kind of co-creation element. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if right now the voices of animals are getting louder because of where the planet is. Do you feel like they're trying to reach us more now?
Let me tune in to how I feel about that one second. I mean, the answer that came in right away was that, you know, they've always been very present. And one thing that, you know, is interesting about the power animal guides, as opposed to other guides that I work with, like certain ascended masters or archangels, the animals do tend to very much appreciate a leaning in on our part and an invitation, some sort of an acknowledgement on our end of like, I see you. Thank you. I would like to open up this connection line even further. So there's that at play, which I always like to let people know. But the answer that came in is that they've always been here and they've always been very communicative in a lot of ways. I think it feels more like what's happening is there's just so many people that are having varying levels, degrees of awakenings. And a level of an awakening can be someone like even I'm seeing a lot of young people on TikTok, let's say 17, 18 years old, where maybe walking the spiritual path isn't something that they do yet, but I see them expressing, you know, with so much passion and oftentimes tears, like there's just something off about this earth life that it doesn't make sense to them that they're supposed to clock in for all of these hours every day to a job that they don't like. And like, how is it that we incarnate on this magnificent planet and all they want to do is explore it, but they feel like they have to go and live a certain way. And I'm just seeing that so often. And it's really a beautiful process for me to witness. Of course, I hope that they find their way with as much grace and ease as possible. But while it may not be a divine intervention awakening like I had, that's so clearly their soul intelligence, you know, their soul trying to communicate with them of like, there is a different way than this model of living that a lot of us have been told is like, is the way or the only way. So my point is, you know, people I think are just on a conscious or still bit of an unconscious level right now, waking up more and more and more every day to leaning in and being more receptive and open to the possibilities that animals really are our spiritual teachers and guides. So it's not that the animals weren't there or weren't being vocal or weren't being present. I think it's more people are just finally feeling that true place in their low belly of like, wow, this resonates. This feels like truth. And this other way of earth life doesn't. And that kind of dynamic.
Yeah, I get that. It's part of a bigger awakening that's happening. Yeah. So do you have any practical tips for people who are in sort of early stages? Of course, as you mentioned, there are so many shades of awakening, and it's a very individual process. But do you have any guidance on that?
Yeah, that's a beautiful question. And you hit the nail on the head. Yes, it's so nuanced and so so unique in every single person's case, how the path begins to open up for them. And if they decide to fully walk across that threshold and keep going, or if they want to turn back around and go back the other way. You know, there's so many details to it. But one tip that I give that was the biggest life changer for me, of course, like I've said, you know, my awakening came from an intervening of my spiritual guides. But the next step that I took that I do give myself credit for was my decision to surrender. And it was in, you know, the veil lifting for me and me seeing all of those hard aspects about myself to face that I realized that I needed to face myself a lot more and do a lot of deep healing work. And so I finally decided to get out of my own way is essentially how I can describe surrender. And I did speak out loud to Great Spirit, to Great Mother Earth, and to my own soul. And I expressed my readiness to get out of my own way. I acknowledged that I did not know what I was doing and that I was ready to really receive in their support. And a course I used to offer, one of the 9 shamanic journeys was one all around surrender. And I offered a surrender statement for those, of course, that resonated with and they wanted to lean into that process, that it was available to them. But you can come up with your own surrender statement. You know, whoever you work with and speak to, whether it's God, Goddess, Universe, Source, the Cosmos, you know, whoever your place is. And I, of course, recommend sitting in some sort of a sacred place, even if it's an altar in your own home that just has a candle and some other sacred object that helps you remember who you truly are. And once you feel in connection to your own heart, just expressing, I recommend out loud. It doesn't have to be, but you can do it inwardly or outwardly, expressing your readiness to divine and to great Mother Earth, that you really want to work in harmony and in a co-creative space with them. And then the next important step to all of that is to heed the guidance that comes in, because the messages and the support, you will start to be more aware of it. But again, you've got two options. You can pretend that you didn't hear the whisper from the wind or that nudge from source for you to go into a place that you weren't planning to go or whatever it might be. You can either ignore it or you can listen to it and follow what I call the divine connect the dots. And the last little thing I'll share with that is oftentimes, especially initially, the signs that come in may feel very illogical or strange or weird and make you question like, but that doesn't make sense. And that's kind of by divine design. So you can begin to cultivate a trust within your own self, a trust of your connection to your intuition, and a trust to divine and the messages they're sending. So if you feel something as odd as that something might feel, you know, follow it and see where the breadcrumbs take you.
I'm all for following breadcrumbs. You know, what's coming up for me as you talk about surrender, which I think is a really important concept and a hard one, and something I've really grappled with and continue to, it's really, this opening up to this idea of, I really don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. None of us actually know. Mm-hmm. I mean, we really don't know. This is the fucking cosmic joke. Yeah. I don't know. I can't do this alone. And not only that, you know, but I actively need help and support. I actively need it. I look for it. I embrace it, please. And I think that's so, against everything we've been sort of taught, you know, which is in this kind of rugged individualism that we were sort of raised in. You know, we're supposed to prove ourselves and kind of do it alone and pull it off. And it's like, what is this that we're supposed to all be, you know, manifesting? Again, it's quite interesting when we look at those words, like pulling it off. It's a kind of otherized position. It's the no there of life, you know? So if it's not it, then it's this. And what is this? And then this is like, wow.
The great mystery.
Totally. Yeah. Exactly. This great, great mystery, this great unfolding, this opening versus proving. And yes. And then we're in this world of symbols, signs. I mean, I personally call it the world of fruit and flowers. So I default world is, you know, it's like skyscraper world. And then future world to me is the world of fruit and flowers. So it's to me, what that means is sort of following feeling, following beauty, following truth on a work, you know, in a sort of embodied way. So that's more like, what do I find yummy and delicious and connected? And feels kind of, it's sort of like what feels true and good and delicious. So that's my sort of little version of it. But when we're in this world of sort of starting to listen and navigate in a different way, then we're looking at signs. So this is interesting. And how do we need to know, like, where voices are coming from? We might have a voice saying, you know, you must, you know, quit your job. do we need to know where that voice comes from? Do we trust that that's higher self? Could it be the devil on the shoulder? Could it be the old, you know, Uncle Jack who always, you know, wanted you to, who was a disruptor? Do we need to know, like, how do we navigate this stuff?
Yeah, I mean, that's a whole massive aspect of the spiritual path, of the hero's journey, is that one category that you're describing. And oh my God, as I'm tuning in, there's so many layers to it, but that the main word that's coming in is that discernment piece. And of course, in a world of infinite possibilities, like it would be possible for you have your awakening and all of a sudden your discernment light switch just gets flicked on and you are dialed in. But more often than not, really tuning in to that discernment light switch takes a lot of practice. And that's where I think we really have to give ourselves and others a lot of as much grace and compassion. You know, to me, there's a big difference between somebody who is really willing and like really goes for facing themselves and really goes for the uncomfortable, nitty-gritty, challenging work that comes up when you're on the spiritual path, and they're giving it their all, but maybe in the process of learning about how their gifts work or learning how the divine works for them, you know, they might hit a few bumps along the way. There's that, which to me is beautiful. And that is the path. It's earth school. You know, we're here to learn and grow. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there's the other side of someone's just too scared to face things and they just are in a total place of resistance of making the unconscious conscious. And, you know, it does begin to create problems when someone is so steadfast against facing their own blind spots and facing their own shadows and doing what I like to describe as cleaning up their own side of the street. That's where things get a bit wonky. But as long as someone is willing, you know, to put in the work, sometimes, you know, you'll quote unquote make a mistake and there will be additional learning of like, oh, my radar was off a little bit there. I thought that was my intuition, but that was actually fear. But in that process of being at least willing and trying, your muscle for being able to clearly understand what's coming from where strengthens. And I do feel it's a very important part of the path. Like I know when I'm connecting in, I know when I'm calling upon Ascended Master Jesus or the animals or when my grandpa from the other side has come forward or different people from the other side or when I'm speaking directly to Great Mother Earth, I'm very aware of who I am communicating with. And I do think that's important.
First of all, I love this idea of Earth School. Wow. Yeah. everything that is implied, including the humility of that, the idea of, you know, the ground and the humility of the earth itself. And so you channel Mother Earth. Does she come to you? Do you invite her in? How does that work?
Yeah, I commune with her and I talk to her. I don't know that I necessarily channel her, but I hear her messages. And when she instructs me to relay what she's saying, in an event or in a talk, of course I say, you know, that it's from her and I impart the message to the group. But, it's for me, you know, oftentimes a lot of ways to do, this methodology, it's very, very simple. And it should be. It doesn't need to be complex. I sit at my altar every morning and make sure that my vertical line connection points are all in place. So for me, it's sending my earthing grounding cord from my root chakra, from the base of my spine and tailbone, down into Great Mother Earth. And upon connecting with her, as I see my earthing grounding cord going down, you know, I take a moment to say hello, to acknowledge her, to thank her. And sometimes, my grounding cord will just lock right into a particular place. Sometimes my cord will kind of navigate around and go through different areas of different types of sedimentary or crystals. And I know that I'm supposed to receive some sort of a code or medicine from that area. Sometimes I might pause in that area and talk to the emerald crystal and ask, like, you know, why was I pulled over here today? Sometimes I'll just receive the transmission and keep going. Sometimes I'll decide to go and the alive molten center core of her. A lot of times I prefer to go to the complete underside, the underbelly of her, and like an anchor, latch on so that I am fully connected, you know, all the way down and through. So I know that I'm as landed and grounded and connected to her as possible. And I mean, the communication is just as simple and easy and quick as it is in my conversation with you. It's in real time. I hear her, I feel her. If I ask if there are certain blessings or medicines that she wishes to send to me, you know, I'll just sit in silence. And sometimes I feel them very clearly. Sometimes they're more gentle. But once I feel that process complete, the two other important points are my heart. So I run that connection line and make sure I'm centered in my heart intelligence for the day. And then my cosmic line directly into the center of source. And it's a very similar process of tracking that cord up, feeling the clicking and connecting in. Sometimes the Ascended Master Jesus is waiting there to have a little chat with me, or other guides are there. Sometimes I'm just in source field and I'll just marinate in that for a second, give an honoring thank you. But that vertical line is actually where the name Rock Star Shaman comes from, as being connected into Rock, Great Mother Earth, and the star cosmos, Great Spirit Field. And the shamanic part is the path of the heart. So that vertical line is where I live my life from.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for that description. That was wonderful. Is this something we can all do at home?
Yes, for sure. I mean, highly recommend it, you know.
Are we all baby shamans?
Yeah, we all have shamanic truths and wisdoms encoded inside of us. I think the only differentiating factor is some of us are encoded to where the shamanic medicine is dominant in a way where we are instructed to be of service and to express those wisdoms in a way of holding space for others or facilitating awarenesses, awareness finding for others. And other people, while we all have, the shamanic truths and energies inside of us, others might just be more guided to immersing in and experiencing shamanic traditions, but don't have the call that they are to become at one with the shamanic path and to mm-hmm. be public with it and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you find the these words problematic, being a shaman or being a medicine woman? And how should we understand that and talk about these things?
Yeah, no, I'm actually really glad you brought this up. I don't feel it's problematic, but it's an area that is important to talk about and to hold an honoring place of non-judgment when learning how every shaman's path works, because we are all different. There are no two healers and no two shamans alike on this entire planet. And so I have a lot of shamanic colleagues who also have been given the clear instruction to use that title. Maria Mbuni being one of them, Eagle Woman being one of them. And I have interviewed them both on my podcast to hear and for them to express how that came in for them. I also have many shamanic colleagues who absolutely do not feel that they were given the instruction to use that title. Some may use shamanic practitioner. Some do not use a shamanic term at all. And I know that they are shamans. They know that they are, and they don't use the terminology at all. And it's, you know, for me, I know my truth and I know my assignments and I know I'm good within myself in terms of knowing that me using the title is not about ego. And it's all about me answering the instruction I was given to hold that space as a woman shaman. I am to hold that line. I am to hold that space. And for those willing to be open and remember, bring them back to the ancient remembrance that the first shamans on the planet were women. And historically, when you look back, in a lot of different villages and tribes, the main medicine women, the main medicine people were women. And yeah.
Well,
I've just gotten far away from that remembrance.
sorry to cut you off. Was that where you wanted to go? Was the
yeah, I mean, yeah, we can go there. Let me just make sure, because it's so nuanced and there are so many misunderstandings around this. Let me just make sure there wasn't any other little thing before we, if we want to pause in that area, we can. Just one second. I think the only other thing is I will say, you know, when I was given that instruction, it was not something I took lightly. And it was honestly something that I could feel the gravity around. I could feel the boldness and I could feel the big medicine in. And I did a lot of inner work to ensure that I was in connection with divine and answering that instruction to use that title. And it wasn't coming from, you know, another place inside of me.
Yeah. I can feel that in your incredibly forthright energy. And it's not just calling yourself a shaman. It's calling yourself rock star shaman. You want to talk about being bold in your statement about yourself. And this is very interesting. And I'm wondering, and I'm maybe even assuming a little bit that this may be part of your particular medicine. Do you feel like that's one of the messages that you're sharing is yes. for people to be bold?
It's been a very medicinal journey, you know, because that specific medicine name of Rockstar Shaman came in very early on after my awakening. And as I mentioned, especially with that name specifically, I went into a guided shamanic journey and called my main love and light guide, Ascended Master Jesus Ford, and asked him, you know, is this of ego or am I to really use this name? Because I could feel how big it was.
Yeah.
And he was emphatic, you know, that this is why I'm here. And it's been a voyage, trust me, of over about a decade now. Of, you know, I was at a place where I didn't want to use it. And I changed my Instagram handle from at Rockstar Shaman to at I am Allison Charles. And there were times in my path where I was trying to eliminate it and make it go away and make it be more of an AKA. And then it would slowly just dissolve and it would just... I am still to hold that name. And if and when the time comes where I'm instructed that that name and the medicine it was supposed to share has run its course, fine, I will cease using it. But yes, it is to, I really learned that I've also been instructed to be an educator in the space. And that was another area that I really resisted because it's a big responsibility and it's over sensitive subject matter. And that education piece, one of the pillars that comes with that and the name Rockstar Shaman is bringing people back to an understanding that it's every living being's birthright to learn how to honor and commune with the very planet that we live on and to learn how to commune with and honor the unseen realms and to be in that place of oneness and co-creation that we've been talking about this whole interview. The other important piece to that in terms of honor, though, and this is where it can get very sensitive, is, you know, while my shamanic path works from Great Mother Earth and Great Spirit, and I haven't taken sacred oaths of certain earth-based traditions and cultures, there is that other side of it, of making sure that we are being honoring and acknowledging Indigenous peoples and First Nations. They were the first people to answer the shamanic call. And a lot of them have been incredibly brave in holding sacred truths and wisdoms for hundreds or thousands of years. And, you know, for a lot of them, it's not been easy to maintain the aliveness of those sacred practices. So while I don't adhere to a particular lineage that's earth-based, I still always, and I do feel it's important for any shaman or shamanic practitioner to acknowledge, you know, the fact that we, those of us, especially that do this work publicly, we're very fortunate to be in this place because a lot of them still to this day, their sacred practices are still illegal. So there's a lot to all of this.
Yeah. There's a lot at your back.
Yeah.
Right. There's a lot of support and wind and grace. And yeah, you've definitely been gifted. And with that, there is a responsibility. I see that there's a big piece of sort of machinery that you're navigating, and I respect that. you know, my equivalent is banana. In came that image, you know, when I was maybe 8 years old as a name, and it was a joke, and it was a story, and it was a fun thing to share with friends, but it never left. And over time, and this is not animal medicine, this is fruit medicine, but hey, it's this symbol has had a very interesting, powerful, ongoing sort of unpeeling for me, as a symbol of sort of juiciness, embodiment, sexuality, intrigue, and silliness, which is actually, you know, that's a lot of my sort of sacred path is the fall and silliness and questioning and the unlearning and the unknowing and unpeeling and revealing. And it's so interesting what ends up being sacred, you know, in life. It's just not necessarily back to, you know, unlearning, and it's not what you think. You know, I'm finding more and more meaning following these very personal symbols because they have real juice and they have real aliveness in them. And I feel that that connects very deeply with our dreams. And I feel like, you know, my medicine journeys have led me back to my own personal dreams and my own personal symbols and my own personal truths. And I'm just so moved by the fact that, you know, dreams, I really feel that they don't actually die. And I think that we kind of try and cover them up as we go through life, through disappointment and, you know, this happens and I can't probably do this and I can't do that. And yet, under these, you know, these piles of earth that we've been putting on top of them, buried under that, these dreams are still alive. And I think we're gifted with dreams, each one of us, like these little seeds that are sown into our being. And I love that we have this sort of possible adventure of finding out what each of these dreams really holds, because this is our personal kind of personal fuel, and this is renewable personal fuel. It's not from the outside. Going back to the beginning of the interview, where you're looking to the lover, you're looking to the guy, you're looking to the husband, you're looking to whoever the job, to give it to you. This is a different way of understanding. It's like, oh, we already have it. We have it inside us, and as you're helping us see, we have it all around us. We have it through, you know, any number of guides. They're everywhere. Yeah. And I guess if we take the time to slow down and reach out through intention. So what an amazing world of exploration. And, you know, I'd like to spend more time with you sometime so we can go deeper and further. But what I'd like to do today is wrap up by talking about what your greatest challenge is. Or your greatest challenge, hopefully it's just one, in the work that you do, and your greatest hope for the future.
So the greatest challenge within my work? Is that what you asked? Okay.
Yes.
Let me tune in to see what. Yeah, a couple came in, so let me see which one to say. I mean, I think I already started to touch and share on what perhaps is maybe the biggest challenge is just, being instructed to be an educator in the space, because it is very different. Like when I was, for many years while I was living in New York City, you know, instructed to guide a lot of shamanic events and journeys. And that is very different. Immersing people in experiences is one thing, and then being asked to step up as an educator in the space is another. So I think that really stopping resisting and stepping into that assignment has been probably the biggest challenge to overcome, and provided the most fires that I had to walk through. But since I already touched quite a bit on that, the last little other nugget that I'll express that has been challenging is I'm very much a seer, S-E-E-R. And so I just see so much, especially within others. Even though I'm not invasive with my gifts, it's just that gift is so strong in me that I just am so aware of people's, especially their blind spots, their shadows, where they're holding themselves back, limitations that they're just like clinging to, and just different dysfunctions within them that keep them from being in alignment with their wholeness and divinity. And so that has been very challenging to navigate. Thankfully, more people are letting themselves do that level of work in terms of facing things. But to be aware of so much and to see so much, and oftentimes not having an outlet, because I can tell that someone is not in a place of readiness to hear what I have picked up on about them. It could cause more damage than good if I were to share it. It's a big space to hold for people. And I've had to learn how to like get it out of my system so I'm not carrying things that aren't mine to carry. So I wouldn't change it. I like to always make sure that that's clear, you know, to source in my own being. It's a miraculous gift to have. But I become aware of a lot of things at play energetically that most people don't see or feel at all.
I hear you.
Okay. And then my greatest hope for the world.
Sure. And you can go personal as well. You're allowed to be.
Let's see. Well, as cliche as it might sound and is like, oh, that's the answer as it might sound, it's all about the heart space. And I had a really beautiful realization in a ceremony a week or two ago where I felt my heart expanding and expressing in a way that felt very new. And it was a little confronting at first because I thought, my gosh, like I know that my heart is very, very open and has a very strong resonance, but what is this whole other thing? And essentially, it was my heart was expanding me into what I now call the heart beyond the heart space, and to these what were previous ghost chambers of my heart that I didn't even know existed. And so even though I've been on the path of the heart as a shaman for many, many years and lifetimes, it was so beautiful for me to realize there's even more. There's even more heart space to open up to. And so I think my greatest hope right now is for people to not discredit, you know, the wisdom of the heart, and to really, of course, you know, you can't force anyone to do anything, but if it resonates in any level, start to commit to practices, rituals, methods, ceremonies that turn you back to you, that heal, cleanse, clear, transmute, do whatever your heart is beckoning to have done for it, so that you can unite with it and really be in tune with the guidance system that lives there. Because if we are united with our own hearts and we know ourselves in full and in true, that allows us to hold a place of compassion and non-judgment for others who want to get to know themselves and all truths as well. And I think now more than ever, living in that way is just so vital, to be in a place of openness and non-judgment, and to commit, to make a personal commitment to cleaning up our own side of our street. And in doing so, you can't avoid doing the work of the heart. So tuning in right now, or when this interview is done, and asking your own heart, you know, what does that look like for me? What does that look like for us? What practice or what do you need to do, my beautiful heart, to feel in safety, to feel more healed, to feel more whole? Whatever it is for you, have your own dialogue with your heart and allow it to show you what next step you can take to tend to it.
Uh-huh. I love your message. This is beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing. And tell us where we can find you best.
Okay. The best place is my website. I spell Allison, or I guess my parents spelled Allison, A-L-Y-S-O-N. So it's a little bit of a different spelling. AllisonCharles.com/animal power. That takes you to my website where you can have various options for where to get Animal Power book. And if you do that, then you can get emailed the free video guided shamanic journey where I facilitate for you to do what we talked about, to go into the different realm and call your current power animal forward. So if you're wanting to learn how to work with the realms, you can do it. And so yeah, you can do that at my website. And then Instagram, I'm still, I guess, most active there on social media, and that's at I am Allison Charles.
Thank you, Allison.
Thank you, Banana Jane. It's been really good getting to know you. And I love that I had no idea that Banana Jane was a medicine name for you. And I loved expanding into a greater understanding of how that's functioned in your path, in your life. And yeah, it was beautiful to connect with you more today. Thanks for having me on.
Likewise. Sending you love.
You too.
Bye, Danny.
Bye.
Gosh, Allison's message about opening up the chambers of the heart, about finding these ghost chambers of the heart, this untapped possibility within our own hearts, really speaks to me. Sending out love and light, and I'll catch you for the next one.